Once again, and welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And this hour, we're looking at the fight in Maryland over voting rights for ex-offenders, a bill that would have extended those voting rights to all those who served their time and were released from prison, even if they were on parole or if they're on probation, was passed by the House and the Senate, but was vetoed by Governor Larry Hogan. Now, work is in a way to overturn the governor's veto. That may become one of the first things that hits the floor of the General Assembly this month, right after our Annapolis summit, by the way, the morning of the Annapolis summit, on the 13th of January. So we're going to talk about that this hour, and we're going to begin by looking at what the politics are behind it, what has transpired, what might happen in the future. We're joined by Brian Sears, who is the government reporter for the Daily Record, who are our print partners for the upcoming Annapolis Summit. Brian, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Same to you, man. Same to you. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages, Mark Steiner Show, 410-319-8888. So, Brian, take us back for a moment to the history. This was a bill that one of our guests here today, Delegate Coy McCray, helped introduce in the General Assembly. And it actually passed, but give us a bit of the history and what happened.
Well, that's correct. It passed, and like a number of the bills that were ultimately vetoed by the governor, there were five in this past session that were vetoed. This is one of those bills where the margins of passage were fairly close. This was passed largely along party lines, and it's going to come up for it's got to come up for a veto override early in the session. It's going to be really interesting because this will really come down to what happens in Delegate McCray's chamber. In the Senate, this bill passed by essentially a veto-proof majority, and I think most observers believe that those numbers in the Senate will hold. But over in the House, where you need 85 votes for a veto override, this bill falls about three short. If you go in and dig a little deeper into the numbers, the margin's actually a lot closer. For example, Delegate Proctor, Jim Proctor, who passed away last year, he was not present for the vote. His wife is now filling his seat. I think some of the folks that I've spoke with expect that she will probably vote with the majority on this. There was another
Proctor's
delegate,
a Democrat from where?
From Prince George's County,
right.
There was another delegate who was not who did not vote. And the reasons behind that aren't clear to me. But if he decides to vote in the veto override, that brings that margin down to one vote.
Which is certainly
gettable. But again, I need to point out that the vote on this was largely along party lines.
So talk about the background for me, from what you see the politics and the divide around this being.
Well, the divide on this is pretty for the governor. He's drawn a fairly clear line in his veto message. He rejected this bill because he believes that, in his mind, ex-offenders who are on parole and probation for felony convictions have not completed their sentencing requirements, their sentencing until they finish those parole and probation. And for him, that was the reason why he vetoed that.
So what do you think would switch? What would move people, Republican or Democrat, to move their vote?
I think maybe Delegate McCray will disagree. He knows someone lurking out there that I don't. I think probably if there's a vote to be found, it's going to be found in the Democratic caucus. That really is going to depend on most likely how hard these votes are whipped. I know that supporters of this, especially externally, some of the organizations that have supported this bill, spent a good deal of time over the summer, doing some work in the public, doing a lot of events, trying to generate support for this. I think it's really going to come down to how the votes are whipped on the floor. But I have a hard time seeing any Republicans from the Republican caucus switching their votes on this. I think if there's one vote to be found in the House of Delegates, it's going to come out of the Democratic caucus.
That's really interesting. So you, if you were a betting man as a journalist,
You know, Mark, I tried to use up all of my crystal ball stuff for the $400 million lottery tomorrow. So you know,
I did too. I hope it works for me as well. If it does, I'll give you a call. I'll take you out for dinner. But it sounds to me like it could be really tight, but it certainly is not a slam dunk.
Yeah, it is not. It is not a slam dunk. But one vote is not. One vote is not insurmountable. I mean, when you look at if we were talking about a solid three votes, if we didn't have votes on this bill that were unaccounted for, Mark, I think that we'd be talking about something a little different. Three might be a little hard to come up with. One is certainly doable. And I think it's a lot easier to do with a Republican administration. I mean, under Democratic governors, O'Malley, Paris Glendinning, for example, it was I'm hard pressed to think of any bills that were overridden by the general any veto overrides in the General Assembly. It is not that uncommon with Republican governors. It's just kind of the way the politics play out, and so it would not surprise me. If most of these bills that were vetoed get overridden, I will tell you my stone cold lock of the session will be that the House and the Senate will override the line item veto on the capital budget project for Maryland Hall. That was the program that's favored by Mike Bush that the governor specifically singled out and vetoed. I think indications are that both sides are going to make sure that they. Both chambers are going to make sure that they veto override that. So if I had to say that of those that are in play, that one would be my stone cold lock of the session.
Well, Brian, it's always good to talk to you. I know I've found that before. I will see you next Wednesday at the Annapolis Summit.
Absolutely, sir.
Brian Sears, government reporter for the Daily Record, a partner of the Annapolis Summit. Brian, thanks so much, man, for joining us. Appreciate it. And on our way to our conversation here, I do want to get folks to make this call, not just to the station, but we want you to join us for the Annapolis Summit next Wednesday. We'll be telling you this numerous times here today. Next Wednesday morning from 7 to 10 a.m., 7:30 to 10 a.m., we have the governor, we have the Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, your chance to ask them all the questions you want and be part of that audience. You can just call Morgan Cook at 443-524-8181. 443-524-8181 to reserve your seat. Contact Morgan Cook at that number. And now we're going to switch, come right here back to our guests who are in studio with us to kind of look at this. Delegate Corey McRae, who represents the 45th District here in Baltimore City in the House of Delegates, was the lead sponsor of the bill in the House side that would have restored voting rights to an estimated 40,000 ex-offenders in Maryland who want to vote. And joins us here in studio once again. Clayton Guyton joins us, Executive Director of the Rose Street Community Center, a former correctional officer, but more importantly, Clayton Guyton runs a program with ex-offenders in this city. That's one of the most successful programs in the city and understands this, what it means for community life to have this become part of our reality. And joining us is Perry Hopkins, who's an advocate and community organizer for Maryland Communities United. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you all in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
Hey, good morning.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. By email, you can tweet us at Mark Steiner. And you can also log on to our Facebook pages, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts. Many, if you have done time yourself, we'd love to hear your thoughts about the struggle you have in the community and to make life whole again. Voting is part of that. What you think from a community's perspective. Maybe you don't agree that ex-felons should have the right to vote while they're still on parole and probation. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Corey, good to see you, man.
It's great to see you, and just thank you for bringing light on such an important subject matter.
Yeah, I'm going to raise that mic a little closer to you. There, we got you. Good.
Got it.
Got you. Get that voice in there. So let's begin. I mean, so you introduced this bill, and it was vetoed.
Mm-hmm.
It won by a narrow margin.
Mm-hmm.
And you just heard Brian Sears talk about the politics of this, which I want to talk about first, which is you may have two votes, but you still be one vote shy. That could be a very hard vote to get if it's Republican votes who say no or yeah.
So, yep. So during the last previous legislative session, House Bill 980, the right the ability to restore voting rights to ex-felons was co-sponsored by a third of the House. So keep in mind, we had over 50 co-sponsors on this bill. Senator Conway put in Senate Bill 340, which passed. And as Brian stated, it was 31 votes in the Senate. You need 29. So it's a comfortable margin within the Senate. But one of the things that we tend to forget about is that elections are decided across our state by such close margins. How do we leave out 43,000 people out of that conversation? And when I say close margins, I'm talking about in Prince George's County, an election with Denny Taveras when I ran was decided by 3 votes, Mark. 3 votes. In West Baltimore County, my buddy Pat Young won by less than 55 votes. In Southern Maryland, Dev Ray won by less than 75 votes. So when we're talking about transportation, when we're talking about workforce, when we're talking about any and everything, housing, so many things that affect so many people, how can we leave 43,000 people out of that conversation? 43,000 Maryland taxpayers, I might add.
What about the argument the governor makes? The argument that that he thinks that people need to serve their entire sentence before they should be allowed to have the right to vote.
So the governor and myself would disagree that it is a difference between a person that's serving on parole and probation and a person that's in a prison system. A person that's home, a person that's living in our community, paying taxes, having challenges with a job, having challenges with housing, having challenges with transportation, deserve the right to fully be integrated in the process. And imagine, I always try to equate it to maybe when you're young and you may like to play basketball. Imagine how those folks feel that didn't get picked up in that starting five. Mm-hmm. Imagine how they felt. So that feeling comes about where you're already having a challenging time coming home. You're already talking about things that you're trying to participate in, but you keep getting pushback. You keep being pushed.
So I mean, before I turn to other guests here, let me just push a little bit further. I mean, I hear your analogy, but I mean, if I was to say, I mean, I'm always one of those guys who, you know, didn't get picked for the first ring on many teams, except when I started. Anyway, so, but that's part of life, and that people say if you commit a crime against society, you should have to kind of go through paying for what you've done before you can be included in the fullness of society, which I think the argument that Governor Hogan's making and that many of the Republican members and more conservative members are making in the House and the Senate.
But I go back and I push a little bit further. How was this country founded? This country was founded because people felt like they weren't getting representation That's for right. the taxes that mm-hmm. they were paying.
Exactly.
And when you're having all these challenges, the things that erupted in April, these things don't just come out of nowhere. These things come because people see resources dumped into other communities and not in the communities that have the challenges. When we talk about where these ex-offenders live at, they're concentrated in certain communities, Mark. They're in the Oliver community. They're in the McEldry Park community. They're in Berea. They're in the 21217. So they're not everywhere. They're in certain communities. And you know what's not coming to those communities? Resources. Because it's not a voting population. You know what elected officials or pay attention to? People that vote or people that have the opportunity to vote.
So let me introduce our other two guests and have them lead in the conversation. Please, folks, do join us. We want to hear your ideas at 410-319-8888. With Clayton Guyton and Perry Hopkins with us here in the studio along with Delegate Quinn McRae. Perry, before we turn to Clayton, I see you were about to leap into the microphone, so go ahead, man.
Let me first say good morning.
Good morning.
And to piggyback just a little bit on what Corey had to say, the alienation, and I'm speaking from my personal perspective, okay, I'm a 3-time ex-felon, all right? The perspective that you have coming home is very optimistic. You look forward to picking up and moving on with your life. You want to start a new life. You want to go back and rejoin society in a way that you never had before because before you made yourself an outcast. Also, taxation with representation. Once again, this country was founded on it. This is another case of do as I say, not as I do. I have the responsibility to pay taxes and to be productive, but I don't have any opportunity to participate in that process. It's alienating, okay? And it's very detrimental to someone's success. As he said, you face many barriers. You don't even have a chance to change any of the barriers. This governor has vetoed a bill that would allow people to become integrated, take a stake in their communities, and feel like, all right, and participate as a productive member of society. It's also to be noted that this law prohibits you from being able to vote for who runs the country. It goes farther than the local election.
Exactly.
Now, this state has an entity called the Division of Correction. The Division of Correction takes a person in from a criminal court for a criminal offense. He's assessed a penalty and he has to serve a sentence to a certain percentage. When he's completed that requirement, he is then reintegrated into society. His time is done. As he said, we live in the communities. We work with you. We go to church with you. You know, we go out with your daughters, by the way. We pack your groceries.
You have.
All that. Okay? And let me also say, this is not a totally male issue.
Okay? No. I know. What's missing from this table are the women who have served time, the organizations in this town that work specifically with women who have
The big thing here is giving people, giving us a stake. It is what I call voter suppression. It's very contradictory. You know, I've been released, but why am I still doing time? All right, I committed a criminal offense.
You're on parole now, but you can't.
No, I've completed my parole for the first time in my life, but I've completed parole. But here's where I'm getting to, Mark. Okay, I had a criminal offense. I was tried in a criminal court, and I paid a criminal penalty. Why am I serving a civil life sentence? I can't get a job. Okay, I'm being prejudiced on housing. I can't. All those are civil matters.
I want to get into those latter parts of my mind, but Clayton, why don't you leap
well,
in?
Well, I just want to jump in here. Taxation without representation. I mean, we just like the residents of the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C. Same thing. Not only them, but across this country, there's thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, taxation without representation. Now, Obama can use his executive order before he leave office and take a bold step and give the right to vote to all. He can do that. All right? Now, the question is, do he have the guts to do that? And when you look at what Governor Hogan, Larry Hogan, has done, all right, he actually actioned ex-felons to subsidize him. I mean, we're paying ex-felons is paying his salary, but he is saying to them, yeah, give me your money, okay? But you cannot have the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we did talk to the governor's office today, and they're willing to come on to talk about this, but they couldn't – not today. But they would maybe argue that, look, we have this program we set out now to make sure that people who come out of prison have work and be trained for jobs. I don't know what money's in that program or what depth there is, but what about that, Corey?
So one of the things that we always tend to forget, and I always try to remind businesses of this, is that they come into our neighborhoods, they give us turkeys, they give us coats. But, Mark, it's $4 million going to certain municipalities for school. It's millions of dollars in housing money going to different places in different jurisdictions within our city. The red line, we just looked at $700 million get taken away from Baltimore and spread out to everywhere but Baltimore. So when you talk about these policies, how are these decided? They're decided by the people that go in there. So you can come give somebody a turkey, you can come give somebody a coat, but please know that they're getting hundreds of coats, hundreds of turkeys when they're appropriating this money in different places, and the ultimate turkey is the vote.
Absolutely. And
also, if I could just step in, this is what I'm talking about, okay? You got a program where you're going to give ex-felon jobs so they can pay taxes, again, to fuel your machine, but they can't vote. All right? I mean, really, I can't do anything about the laws that oppress me. I really can't. I can't strengthen my position on any different platform. And it's wrong, it's unfair, and it's unnecessary. All right? You have a vehicle in place to decide when somebody's ready to return to society. When I come home, let me return. Let me return.
And also, the way it is set up now, you feel sorry for me because I'm an ex-felon. I'm a man. I'm a woman. Give me the right to vote. And then we can sit down and we can negotiate and say, look, this is what we want you to do with your money in terms of being fair to everybody. But right now, right, You feel sorry for me because I'm an ex-felon. I don't want your pity.
Mm-mm.
I want manhood. I want full citizenship like every other American. I don't want your pity.
Or give me a tax. Hey, Mark, or give me a tax deduction. Make me free. Hey, okay, look. Taxation without representation.
There you go.
You don't want to give us representation, so how about don't give us taxation?
And Mark,
don't tax
us. I just wanted to come back around to the jobs piece, because the jobs thing is a very, very important. But why do we have to decide between a vote and a job?
Here we go.
Why do we have to decide between a vote and a job? Why can't they be both? Why can't we have the right to vote and opportunity to have access to job opportunities? So that's what I would say to the governor's office.
So let's say, for argument's sake, that the override happened. So how would it change things? I mean, in reality, because A, we already see a voting public that doesn't come out to the polls.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So how does that change? I mean, it changes the law maybe to give rights to people who deserve some rights, who deserve the right to vote. But how does it fundamentally change things beyond that?
I think that you continue to see people like Perry, you continue to see people like Chris Wilson, you continue to see people like Kevin Sherrod, Nicole Hansen, and so many and so on, that's engaged in the process, and now they get to fully reintegrate into that process and be a part of it, Mark. I think that's how it changes, that you're actually and those folks, they live in certain communities. People start to pay attention to those communities. If you ride through Oliver, if you ride through Berea, you see all the abandoned houses, you
or
see
Gilmore.
The challenges that we have and those things. People pay attention to votes, Mark, and that's the reality.
And also, there's a relationship between voters and non-voters. And so, if I can vote, but my son is locked up and there's no hope, where is my motivation to go to the poll? So maybe these large numbers that we're talking about that don't vote is because they can't see change their vote will take
effect now.
That's right.
Okay.
Where's the change?
There's an energy in the communities of Baltimore right now with the Freddie Gray, okay, with the housing issues and this and that. Change is about to take place. We got a mayor that nobody wanted, and everybody's glad to see. We are ready for fresh blood. I personally have just been empowered with the right to vote for the first time in 54 years.
Because you
years.
Finished parole.
Only
Is that why?
Only because I finished parole.
Right.
Okay? I couldn't vote for the nation's first African-American president because of this law. That affects
How long
me.
Were you on parole?
I was on parole for, 3 years? But the thing is, I've never been able to vote because I've always had a felony and I've always been disenfranchised. I sat on steps and watched Obama get elected, and I had a tear in my eye when somebody asked me, did you vote? You didn't help. Don't take no credit because you didn't. Yeah, that touched me. But what I'm getting to is this. With me having that right, do you know the empowerment and the feeling and the energy that I got now wanting to participate? Okay? I have talked to many, many ex-felons working on the ground. You're going to see a change. These are people who are looking for it so they can exercise it.
So I really do want to explore something that go a little deeper into this when we come back from this break. I want folks, please join us here at 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts and ideas on this question of the right for felons to vote in the state of Maryland. That was vetoed by the governor. That is going to be one of the first bills to be brought up inside the General Assembly. The override will be one of the first votes out there. Your ideas about that. I mean, Speaker Bush has said it's going to be one of the first votes coming out. 410-319-8888, your thoughts on this. And then when we come back, we're also going to explore in a much deeper way what the impact and effect would be on community if that happened. How would it change Ashland, Rose and Ashland neighborhood? How would it change other neighborhoods in this city if that actually occurred? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here as we continue our discussion on a felon's right to vote. It's one of the issues coming up in front of the General Assembly this year, the override, the potential override of the governor's veto. And speaking of the governor, he will be joining us next Wednesday for the Annapolis Summit, where that topic will come up, I'm sure. And so I want to really encourage you all to join us on January the 13th for the 13th Annual Annapolis Summit at the Governor Calvert House on the opening day of the state legislature. It's your chance to have your questions answered, have your voice heard when we talk with a live audience with Governor Larry Hogan, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Michael Bush. I want you to save your seat. Go to thedailyrecord.com/Annapolis-summit or by contacting Morgan Cook at 443-524-8181. That's Morgan Cook at 443-524-8181 or morgan.cook@thedailyrecord.com. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by The Daily Record, Stevenson University, the Maryland State Education Association, Alexander and Cleaver, VPC, the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, and WEAA. Be part of the Annapolis Summit. 443-524-8181. 443-524-8181. And join us next Wednesday. We are here talking about that with Delegate Corey McCray from the 45th District, who was a sponsor of the bill in the House to restore voting rights to felons in our city, in our state, excuse me. Clayton Guyton, Executive Director of the Rose Street Community Center, who runs a very important and powerful program for men coming out of prison and does much more community work as well. Perry Hopkins, who is advocate and community organizer for the Maryland Communities United, and you at 410-319-8888. Larkis, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we can. Good morning.
Good morning. My comment is basically in regards to felons being able to vote or
right.
not.
Right.
I think that if they don't get the right to vote, then they shouldn't be taxed because, you know, there's no taxation without representation. That's one comment. And the second comment is pretty much like a question. How effective has voting been for African-Americans or black people in general in America? I mean, if you look at how long we've been able to vote and how much change or lack of change has taken place during that time, it becomes a question of the effectiveness and the effectiveness of voting. I mean, I know people say, well, it takes time, this, and that. But if you look at change in any other nation or any other country who had the level of oppression and how we've been treated throughout the time since we've been in America, no one really went through the system in order to get any type of justice or liberty. So it becomes a question of how effective voting really is and based upon the level of change that we actually need to see. Thanks.
Good question. Let's all wrestle with that. Why don't you, as our elected delegate here in the room...
Yep.
Corey McCray.
One of the things is that we have large pockets in our communities that can't vote because of being disenfranchised. And what happens is you don't get the most effective leaders when you have that large percentage or just low voter participation part of it. So I also think that when people are engaged and when people are participating in the process, we get very effective leaders. And you'll look at other municipalities, they'll have stronger leaders to be able to watch different where resources are going, advocate for different resources. So we have to get more people engaged to make sure that more leaders lead by example and bring more home for their communities.
But is there an argument to what Larkin is saying, that the right to vote is very important? I mean, I think it's critical in this country. But is it – I guess his argument is, has it really shown that we've had – has it really done anything in a significant way in terms of change in our society, especially change in Annapolis? Somebody argued me the other day that they've been arguing in Annapolis for years for reforming – the way bail is done in the state. So they formed a state commission to change the way bail does. And the commission, made up of all kinds of people in the state, came up and said, well, bail, we should not have a private bail industry. It should be done by the courts. There should not be a bail system that deprives poor people the right to get bail for when they're charged, and let the courts decide. And that was done by the people we were elected, and their commission decided that. But then the political leadership decided, well, that's not coming to the floor, and it doesn't get voted on. So, I mean, so the limitations. So I wonder what you think about that, so what Larkin was saying, about how you balance the need to vote and how maybe piecemeal doesn't always work.
Well, there has to be an educational process. I mean, somewhere along the way, the ball has been dropped in our community for some reasons, several reasons. One, because the level of hope has been dashed many times. Our perception of what voting will do. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, I talk to the guys that come to our program on a regular basis about voting. They say to me, Mr. Siebel, what is it going to do? What is going to happen? So we don't have enough information to let us know that if you vote, your street will get fixed. If you vote, jobs will come to your community. If you vote, the trash in your community will be picked up. See, we don't make those connections. And I think the larger picture makes sure that we don't. Because we don't understand if we vote, we won't have the police brutality that we have. So we don't make those connects until the emergency take place. Now, when an emergency take place like Freddie Gray, then we understand the connect between voting and the results and the treatment that we give overall. So there's a whole machine out there that makes sure we don't understand what our voting will accomplish.
So go ahead, then I'm going to go back to the phone.
I tend to agree with you. Mm-hmm. Okay. They know who they're not giving money to. It's real simple.
Absolutely.
There's a thing in place where I believe that a lot of the Republicans feel that to empower over 40,000 Marylanders that may become Democrats wouldn't be to their interest.
Absolutely.
I'll be honest with you. Let's keep it real. Okay? I think this is a hidden thing behind it. Also, Community United is a grassroots organization, and we work in low-income and impoverished neighborhoods. I can tell you today, they don't want those people organized. They don't want those people to come together, attain a vote, and be able to change some things because they're comfortable in the situation and the arena in which they're in.
You make some interesting kind of undercurrent points here that I think are important for people to honestly wrestle with. I mean, I think that – but very quickly, we have a lot of people calling in.
Very quick. 23 to 28 schools coming with the $1 billion from the schools. The Second Chance Act, marijuana reform. Those are things that happen because of pressure. People feel pressured to do those things. People feel like something could happen if they don't move on those types of things. How is LEOBR going to get changed? How is all these
LEOBR
things –
LEOBR being the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of
Rights. But only way that comes about is people feel like – I could lose my job. I could not be in the House of Delegates. I could not be in the Senate. I could not be in the governor's office if I don't do something about these issues.
Let's go back to phones, 410-319-8888. Let's go to we have Donna, George, Gemma, Robert. We're going to get to all your calls. Let's go to Donna first. You're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Mark? And good. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Donna. Welcome.
Happy New Year.
I've been following the whole push to get the voting rights for our ex-offenders. But I'm kind of curious on why the bill that they put through added those who are on probation. Why was that put in? And because what the governor is saying makes sense, but why would that language be put in there, which would kind of mess it up for, or make it look bad for the ones who have been served their time, have been law-abiding citizens? And I was just kind of curious about why that other language of those who are currently on probation, because if they're still on probation, why would they have a right to vote when they're trying to prove that they're going to be law-abiding citizens
right. After
they serve their time? And I'll hang up and listen.
Donna, thank you so much. Delegate?
Because they're integrated back into the community. They're living right next door to you. Their kids go to the same school your kids go to. They're shopping in the same supermarkets, worshiping at the same place, and they're paying taxes.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the divide. I mean,
so currently in 2007, it was passed where you could have it after parole or probation, but it never made it. And in 2015, the bill was stated basically as soon as you're released from prison.
Right, because there are many states in the country, like Kentucky and others, where you were a ex-felon, no matter whether they're off parole or probation, cannot vote.
Yep.
Period.
It was there. It was like that in Maryland here for a while.
That's exactly till 2007.
Yep.
Right.
See,
that recently.
Once again, in response to the lady,
Go ahead. I just want to get the phones here, but yeah.
They're targeting who they deny. They're knowingly, consciously, directly targeting certain people. It's unfair, it's unjust, and it's un-American.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. George, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, welcome, Mark. How are you?
Very well.
Hey, Corey, how are you?
How you doing, brother?
Good, and all other guests that I don't know names of. I just wanted to just make the comment that I do think that felons should, or ex-felons should get the right to vote for the fact, simple fact that if they've served their time, and whether they've been rehabilitated or not, once they get out, they've served their time. They should have the right to participate as a citizen in the political process. And second, it's a matter of being reacclimated into society. If you can't vote, you know, how can you say you're going to be reacclimated into society, because you can't really participate in society fully? That's my point. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Good point. And Clayton, talk a bit about the reacclimation for a minute, because that's the harder part of your work, right?
Yes, it is. There's a perception. And there's a perception that's developed before a person come home. And a lot of time that perception is not based in facts, but it is based in what's needed. But the fact is, it's difficult for me to get to, I'm going to own a home. I'm going to purchase a car. I'm going to have a good relationship. I'm going to be the father or the mother that I've dreamed that I should be. So programs and mentors and organizations need to be the bridge for that coming back to society. And that's what we don't have enough of.
No, exactly. I mean, that's. I hope we get to a chance, and we get these calls coming in, but we get a chance to talk a bit about that, because part of the problem, even if voting rights occurs in this session, as we talked about before we went on the air, are all the other things that are in the way of people coming out of prison, the jobs you can't get. People be surprised. You can't work in a beauty shop. You can't be in a beauty salon. Can't be a cosmetologist, I'm trying to say. Can't be a barber. You can't work as a home health aide. You can't work as a practicing nurse. You can't work as a truck driver. There are all kinds of things for long-distance hauling. There's all kinds of things that are barriers in the way of the kind of jobs that people would maybe naturally want to go into. And I think that is a really kind of critical piece of the conversation.
Hey, quickly, Mark, you might be cutting hair in jail for 20 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I mean, no more than a master barber out here. But yet, you can't get a job.
Exactly.
I drive a truck and couldn't haul trash.
Right.
They wouldn't let me haul trash because our insurance won't. I'm sorry.
Because you might steal somebody's trash can.
Oh, yeah.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Gemma. Line 3, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, I'm listening to this program, and they're talking about the voting as a panacea for our ills. And allowing felons to vote, how much it may increase the voting population. The person who votes consistently every election is a 55-year-old female. That has not changed in 20 years. The second thing I want to say, that we have to talk about education and people's refusal to be educated. When we have, for the first time this year, 50% of the people last year who went to the ninth grade finally graduated from high school, we have to look at us and ask, why is that happening? The third thing we might talk about is, when you vote someone into office, how does the seniority system of that legislative body affect what they are able to do? We need voter education so that people understand that even though you vote someone in, you may not get what you need. That the Baltimore City Council cannot put together a budget. They can only vote at the mayor's budget, up or down. Let's talk about when you go in the state legislative bodies and you're a junior statesman, how mostly you twiddle your thumbs. So we need voter education. We need education, period. And we need a people. Let's not talk about how they don't want us to do. It is us who aren't doing. It is us who are not taking the yoke in our hands. When will we talk about how us isn't doing right?
Gemma, thanks for your call. So anybody want to begin the response? I mean, I think that the thoughts. Yeah. The 55-year-old female piece is I think that's the in terms when you take all the voters in Baltimore City. the leading percentage of people are black women, working women, but they're not the only people who are voting. But that's the leading percentage of people who vote. But that is true.
So I'm a freshman delegate. I served in my first term, and I feel like I was very effective, and I think that my neighborhoods would say that I was very effective. Put in a prevailing wage bill, put in a voting rights bill, put in a rail safety bill, and came home during the interim. So I followed the money that was given to my communities and worked out community hiring agreements for the Parkway Theater that's being on Charles and North to make sure that the people that live in my zip codes go to work on those projects, to make sure that the project, Makerspace that's being built, 1400 Greenmount Avenue, that it's my zip code, signed an MOU with these contracts because they got money and we leverage. It's like an entrepreneur part of it. You got to make sure that that dollar is being stretched. All those businesses that called and talked about all the great work that's happening across the state of Maryland, come in and talk to my nonprofits that's doing work in my district, and let's talk about leveraging resources in there. Awarded $48,000 worth of scholarships. I think that in 12 months, we were able to do a whole lot. And let's not also talk about the constituent services part of it. When people are talking about the BGE light being out for a week, when people are talking about their BGE going off, when people are talking about the illegal dumping that's happening in the neighborhood, and so many other issues. The National Aquarium, who gets money from state funding, making sure that our schools are visiting the National Aquarium, and they're getting the same opportunities across the state of Maryland. So while leadership is important, let's not put that aside. You should have effective, efficient people that's working for you day in, day out, and just working hard for you.
So, and I think it's the question of stimulating people to vote, and that building a power base of people to vote, which is what I think your group that you're doing,
Community
United, are trying to do, to get organized people in public housing to do that, and around Ashland Avenue is to organize people to vote and get that power.
Touch
built.
Them. They want to see absolutely. You. They want to touch you.
Right.
Yeah. So I go out. I spend a lot of time on the ground, pounding, knocking on doors, building relationships, where the kids in the entire community know my name. All right, I mean, it takes building relationships. We build. We educate through that relationship. We empower through that relationship. There are a lot of people who want to become engaged in the process, and one, as you said, may not have the education but are interested in getting it. Mm-hmm. There are people. There are a lot of people out here who want to vote and are unable to do, just to see how it feels, to take a stab at it. I mean,
before I turn back to Clayton, let me just go back to the phones. There's a lot of people calling in this conversation. 410-319-8888. Robert, line 5, you're on the air.
Hello.
Good morning, Robert.
Yes. I just wanted to emphasize the importance of this discussion, you know, of the ex-cons who do not have the right to vote. Something was brought to my attention, I guess in a book by Angela Davis, it may have been called Why Prisons Are Obsolete, or maybe it's The Nature of Freedom and Other Difficult Dialogues. But she mentioned that in Florida, around about 2000, you remember that questionable stuff that happened in Florida in 2000?
Let's take a step back.
You're
talking about the 2000 vote where the hanging chads denied Gore the victory in Florida, which let George Bush become president of the United States of America, right? Just to clear what you were talking about. Go ahead, Robert.
And some people didn't get the right to vote and all that other stuff.
Right.
Angela Davis points out that I think she said either 100,000, maybe it was 200,000, black men in Florida who could not vote because of their prison records. And she asked, what if they could have been voted and been organized to vote? How would that have affected a national election? I guess in that one state. I wonder I think this is very important. I have no romantic ideas about how great the political system is. I know that when you don't vote, I know sometimes you vote, you still don't get what, you know, you hope you were going to get. But I think we all should keep in mind that this denial of the ballot to ex-convicts, especially given the scale of incarceration, where I think Michelle Alexander says it was more black men in prison now than it was in slavery 150, 200 years ago, that when you begin to disfranchise, especially in a community like ours, this does amount to a kind of reestablishment of Jim Crow in a different form.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very, very
important.
It's
the important. New Jim Crow.
And it's very important. And I sometimes tell some of my students that, because I teach at an HBCU. I tell some of my students, well, I think I'm very happy that you're mobilizing around police brutality and these things. I said, but you need to look at this issue, too. read Michelle Alexander, look at what's happening in this area. I think we need to look at that. If there's going to be a new movement and there's signs that there may be one afoot, I hope this becomes part of what's in our radar screen.
Robert Burr, always good to hear your voice. Looking forward to coming back on the show as a guest. Always glad to hear from you. One of our philosophers here in the state of Maryland, and activist. 410-319-8888. Let's go to get these two calls in here very quick. Get some final thoughts from our guests at 410-319-8888. Let's go to Nia, line two.
Hi, good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Nia.
Good morning, and good morning to Delegate McCray and to the other guests this morning.
Good morning.
I actually wanted to call in to say that there are a lot of young people that have records as well. And I, as a former, I just graduated law school, and new attorney that's working on voting rights issues, this is a very, very key piece of legislation. And really, I mean, in my personal opinion, it should be taken a step further, considering that mass incarceration is a billion-dollar industry and that we make billions of dollars off of individuals being locked up, that they, too, also have voices that should be heard, even despite incarceration. And so I really would like to see this legislation move forward, but education also is an integral piece of the voting rights in general throughout this country, as well as here as well as here in Maryland. So I definitely support it, and like I said, I definitely want to see the education piece, because people are aware, they are alert, and they want to be involved. And so now is the time, because if not, then there are issues when we see spikes in crime. There are issues when we see more violence. But a lot of that is predicated off of lack of opportunity and marginalization. Mm-hmm. So that's all I had to say.
Yep. I'm glad you said it, Nia. Thank you so much. Congratulations on getting out of law school. 410-319-8888, final caller for this hour before we turn to our guest to close out. Sean, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good morning. Good morning. Well.
Yeah, I'm a high school teacher, and I'm always trying to figure out the ideology behind, you know, when a guy does his time and he served his time, you know, how can we just take a permanent part, you know, part of being American is the right to vote. Mm-hmm. How can you take that away forever? You know, just imagine if I was a teacher and I had a student that committed a particular offense in my class, and I took away all his privilege for the rest of the year. That don't even make any sense. And I mean, it really dilutes the vote in our community. And I just did something that I never understood. And I grew up with a lot of guys that went to jail. I grew up with a lot of guys that got criminal records. And those guys will never be able to be part, unless something changes, unless this law is able to go through, they'll never be part of the democratic process again. And that's just really not cool. It's just really not fair. That's the only comment I have. Right. You guys, great show. You guys have a great day.
Thank you, too, Sean. And thank you for teaching our children. Final thoughts. Clayton Guyton.
We need to get behind Delegate McCray and make sure that the Larry Hogan does not stand in our way. We need full citizenship for everybody.
And we'll be hearing a great deal more from Clayton Guyton. We've been talking today about getting down to Action Avenue and getting these stories back out here, because the men that he brings out every day in this community to clean the community, work in the community, stop the violence. And we didn't get a chance to talk about the program, but just for 30 seconds before we join our other guests, just mention that one program you said about the Stop the Violence. What's it called?
Homicide Free Zone.
That your men who came out of prison work in?
Absolutely. They choose a block, and on that block, anything about to occur, they prevent, intervene, and squash. That's what they do, to the best of their ability.
Very important. We need a whole lot more of that. Perry Hopkins, final quick thoughts.
Communities United has been in this fight, organizing people who are most greatly and directly affected. It's time for change. It's time to empower some people instead of disfranchising. Governor Hogan needs to stop punishing people and taking the law into his own hands and allow the free wheels of democracy to roll. I'm going to do everything I can as an organizer. Communities United is going to do everything to continue to bring people together and have their voices be heard and empower people to move forward in this issue. There will be change. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here again today. Good to have you back in the studio. Delegate Corey McCray?
I'd just like to leave with hopefully everybody's calling and emailing, and their senators, their delegates, House Bill 980, Senate Bill 340, less than almost a week away, and hopefully we do override. And I'd just like to also say, back to the lady's comment, that it's some great people that's doing some great work. When I think about Delegate Antonio Hayes and how he stepped up and led by example, I follow his lead a good bit. And in Prince George's, I'm looking at Daryl Bonds and Alonzo Washington. I think that we get the leadership that we elect, but we have to, like she said, we have to educate. But I'm still knocking doors. They're still knocking doors. We're still touching people. And the more we touch and educate, that's what's going to drive out that voter turnout.
So, just very quickly, man, just realistically, I mean, what's that one vote you have to get?
It's
85, but how do you get that vote?
I think that you go out and have conversations with folks. I think just as she stated, with Delegate Proctor wasn't there, so Delegate Susie Proctor is going to be in play. You got Delegate Mike Jackson. You got the only person from Anne Arundel was the speaker, so we need to talk to folks in Anne Arundel. We got Harford County. We got parts. We got to remind them that they have an Edgewood in Harford County. We got to remind them that they have a Glen Burnie. When we looked at the map and the shades of purple for where ex-offenders are sitting, the second highest everybody would think is Prince George's, but it's actually Baltimore County. It's Baltimore County. So when you talk about Dundalk, Essex, the Liberty Road Corridor, you have a lot of ex-offenders in those places that we got to remind people that they're not being paid attention to because they cannot vote. And that's why their legislators probably voted that way. That's the conversation we have to have with them.
So, folks, this is one of the issues that we will be covering here and watching in the General Assembly when it opens up next Wednesday, January 13th. And January 13th is also the day that we have our Annapolis Summit, the 13th Annual Annapolis Summit. We start the conversation off with Governor Larry Hogan, then turn to Senate President Mike Miller and House Speaker Michael Bush. We encourage you to be there to have your voices heard, and you can secure a seat at 443-524-8181. That's 443-524-8181 or morgan.cook@thedailyrecord.com. And join us there and have your voice heard. You'll be in the audience. There'll be a mic in the audience. People will have a chance to have their voices heard. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by The Daily Record, Stephen University, Maryland State Education Association, Alexander and Cleaver, VPC, the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, and WEAA. So be part of the Annapolis Summit. 443-524-8181. I thank Delegate Corey McCray from the 45th District, Clayton Guyton, Executive Director of the Rose Street Community Association, and Perry Hopkins, Advocate and Community Organizer for Maryland Communities United. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here.
CommunitiesUnite.org.
CommunitiesUnite.org. There you go. Check that
out. Come out and join us. Come on out and join us.
Take a brief break, and when we come back from this break, we will be joined by a man who is running to become the next mayor of Baltimore, David Warnock. Stay with us. Don't go away.